Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is TGIF Friday, August 16th, 2013. And once again, welcome to the program and another exciting day here in the gold and silver market. Silver is certainly on a tear. And it's had the best little turnaround run since 1987. So silver's doing extremely well. Gold today was up $7. Tried to go higher. We'll take seven at $13.74. Tried to go lower too, but it managed to pop right back up. Actually went down, touched just shy of the technical that it blew through yesterday. So good day in gold, up seven at $13.74. Silver was up 19 pennies today at $23.30, off its high of the day. Platinum was down $2 at $15.31, along with palladium down two at $767. USDX today was trading up slightly, 0.10 at $81.28, along with crude oil today. The price of oil rose for the sixth consecutive day today. And, of course, a lot of that does have to do with the violence in Egypt and disruptions elsewhere in Middle East and North Africa. You had the benchmark crude edge up 13 cents at 107.46 this afternoon, and it rose 1.4% for the week. And, of course, Brent crude, which is used to price imported crude used by many U.S. refineries, that's up 80 cents. To 110.40 per barrel. And, of course, that Brent crude is the sweet crude. It's a lot easier to refine. The average retail price for gasoline today rose less than a penny to 3.54 cents on the day. And let's see. Let's go to the paper markets. Let's just see exactly what they did do today. The paper markets today edged lower in the red. 3-0 down 0.30 points on the Dow at 15,082. The NASDAQ was down 3 points at 3602. S&P was down 5 at 1655. And a lot of reports came out on bleak outlook. I guess I'll say hi to Al first. Hi, Al.
What is it about the idea of a bleak report that makes you think of saying hi to me? Huh? That's what I like.
I don't know, Big Al.
Don't I get enough abuse around here?
What? Did you notice?
Don't I get enough abuse around here without thinking of something bleak? I think
bleak.
I'll say hi to Al.
Hi, Al.
Hi, Melody.
But Nordstrom came out yesterday, too. It was followed by Walmart and Macy's about where they think U.S. shoppers are going to be pulling back. And you know what cracks me up, Al? You know, here they... how many days, how many weeks, how many months, how many years, you know, do we talk about the shopper, the U.S. shopper, the pain that he's in and that his consumption is just not anywhere near what it used to be. And, of course, these new time analysts and pundits and even retailers come out and are just a little, gee, we're worried that the U.S. shopper might be pulling back on spending. We could make $1 million as economists. But the retail industry is actually watching very closely that part of our economy. As we all know, that 70% of economic activity is based on consumer spending.
Yeah, but that's an idiocy. You know, that is. I don't doubt that that's true in this country, but the you know, how can anyone be surprised?
I know.
If consumer spending is declining, if our productivity, if our ability to produce products and send them, sell them overseas, sell them to Americans, we aren't producing as much, why would anyone think that we can buy as much? There has to be a balance between how much you produce and how much you consume. That doesn't apply to children. It doesn't apply to people that are sick and the elderly and the rest of that sort of thing. But for the vast majority, we can't consume more than we produce. And yet we've lived in this consumer economy for I don't know how long, 20 years we've been talking about it, maybe longer than that. Why would anyone be surprised if this starts to blow up in our faces and people say, oh, my gosh, I can't just shop till I drop anymore. I actually have to have a job. And where are the jobs, Melody?
China, India.
Well, some of them are in China, some
India,
of them are in Mexico,
Korea.
Some of them are in India, some of them are in Washington.
Vietnam.
You get a job with the government. You still don't produce anything. How can we have a positive result? How can the economy hold together if the American people are not producing things? The whole thing is an illusion. We've stumbled into an illusory economy, and we are going to have a price to pay.
Well, you know, this John Fox, he oversees $873 million, which in today's term really isn't that much, in assets as a co-manager of the FAM Value Fund. He says, it's left us scratching our heads, and you're exactly right. How can they not know this? But they do.
You're right. What a mystery.
Their money. Yeah.
What a mystery. We move jobs to China, India, Mexico, and we have reduced the income of those people who still have jobs in this country, the vast majority of them, and then we say, well, golly, this is so surprising. Why aren't they going to buy? They don't have anything with which to buy. That's the reason.
And yet they're still looking to open up new trade agreements, both with the European Union and Asian and more Asian countries. Yeah. And it's like, I don't even know how they can do the dog and pony show for these trade agreements and say they create jobs.
No, it's going to kill us. It's going to
yes.
destroy us further. And
I mean,
the evidence
who buys that anymore? Who buys that?
Apparently most Americans do. Because even if they don't buy it, they don't do anything to resist it. There's no effective process or means or activity that is telling government we don't want any more global free trade. We want our jobs back here in this country. And we have to do it. It's a matter of national survival. And on top of which, it raises enormous questions about the loyalty of the treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac who are passing law after law after law, which are contrary to the best interests of the vast majority of the American people. We are being gutted by our own government, and it will continue until enough people stand up and say, "Helk no." You remember the word "helk"? Melody?
Yes, I do.
I coined that back about, I don't know, 4 months ago, something like that, when I started to say heck. When I started to say hell, and I tried to say heck, and I jumbled the two words together.
I'm going to make you put a nickel in my coin jar here.
I'll send you an IOU.
All right. Hey. Anyway, they're really concerned because we're heading into the school shopping season. And, of course, that's typically the second biggest shopping period for U.S. retailers. Of course, we all know next is Christmas, particularly Black Friday. So so it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But you're right. What else is new?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something about schools just now. Got an article here from the New York Times. It's about Philadelphia. Out in your neck of the woods. The headline is, A City Borrows So Its Schools Open On Time. Just a month after Detroit became the largest American city to file for bankruptcy, and with major cities like Chicago and Los Angeles struggling, this former manufacturing behemoth, they're talking about Philadelphia, is also edging toward a financial precipice. But here the troubles are centered on the cash-starved public school system. Why is the former manufacturing behemoth no longer a manufacturing behemoth, Melody? And the answer is global free trade. They cut the tariff barriers and they forced the people of Philadelphia to compete head-on with the people of China and India and Mexico. And it necessarily means that they lost jobs, and those who retained their jobs lost income. And it's, from my perspective, it's certainly one of the fundamental reasons why here we have Philadelphia. They had to borrow $50 million just to be able to open their schools on time. Helen Jim, who has three children in the city's public schools, quoted as saying, the concept is just jaw-dropping. Nobody is talking about what it takes to get a child educated. It's just about what the lowest number is needed to get the bare minimum. That's what we're talking about here, the deliberate starvation of one of the nation's biggest school districts. I'm telling you, this is a consequence of global free trade. It may not be the only, global free trade might not be the only explanation for what's happening, but as you make a city that used to be a manufacturing behemoth, reduce it, move its jobs to China and India and wherever, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to become increasingly impoverished. They can't afford to run things the way they have in the past. And here they are. They have to borrow $50 million just to open their schools on time. And it will be with minimum staffing and sharply curtailed extracurricular activities and other programs. This is happening because your congressman, folks, and your senator and your president are sitting back and saying, let's send our jobs overseas. It'll be great for the rest of the world. Might not be very good for Americans, but who cares about them? What else, Melody? I don't know. I just, as long as we had the
and you know what's
education
just,
and it triggered that.
You know, just as we've seen in Detroit, you have met probably other Philadelphias out there. And certainly that is...
That's exactly right.
Yes, there's other.
We're not
students.
Done with this. And the article talks about why is Detroit in the enormous problem it's in? It's in there in large measure, to substantial measure, significant measure, because of global free trade. We used to manufacture automobiles in Detroit, lots of them. Now we don't. Why? Well, we're buying cars made in Japan. We've opened the doors up. And that's not news. That's been going on for, you know, but it's part of the problem. I'm not here to defend, you know, Detroit. For a considerable period of time, the big three automobile manufacturers behaved in a way that was arrogant. They just said, we'll make cars any way we want. The paint falls off, let the American people, you know, get them some water or something. Yeah, they can buy a new one. They took advantage of their position. Doors were open. Japan started selling some really good cars in this country. It's made an enormous difference. But the result of opening those doors, it's killed Detroit, or certainly injured it dramatically, and it's happening to other cities in this country. We need to make our own cars. We need to make our own TV sets, and our own computers, and our own flat-screen TVs, our flat-screen monitors, and so on. We need to do this and start producing rather than merely consuming. And we aren't going to do it until we rebuild the tariffs, unless we want to do it where everyone in this country, vast majority, work at third world wages, in which case we will become a third world country.
And the run-up to 2008, the money all came from debt. There's spending sprees come from double mortgaging their homes, second mortgages on homes, and going out and buying everything on credit. And so that's how we came out of that recession of after 9/11. I mean, we were going into a recession before 9/11. 9/11 hit. We went into another one. We came out of it just like drunken sailors, and we leveraged everything. And you can't, these homes, you know, everybody's talking about the positive in the home area, that everybody's out there buying homes. Well, folks, you know, how much is that going to help the economy? Because these folks will not be able to get seconds on their mortgages because it's the same old thing. Very little down. You know, they're beginning to, you know, it's not quite as bad. And then you have, if they pass the immigration bills, you have all this new group of folks coming in. But U.S. developers, there's U.S. builders broke ground on more homes in July. Why? U.S. developers broke ground on homes at a faster pace in July, but, it's always the but, the rise was all due to apartment construction, which is typically volatile. By contrast, builders began work on fewer single-family homes, the bulk of the market, and sought fewer permits to build them.
And what does it mean if we're building more? If I understand what you're telling me, if I understand what you just said, they're building more
apartments. Yeah.
What does that say for people? What does that say about how many people there will be available to buy homes? If they're moving into an apartment, they are by definition not moving into a home. If they're moving into an apartment, they are not buying a new home. If the investments are being made in apartments rather than homes, it does not bode well.
Builders began work on houses and apartments at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 896,000 in July. That was up 6% from June, though below a recent peak of more than 1 million in March. Construction began on 26% more apartments, but declined 2.2% for single-family homes. And, of course, mortgage applications by potential home buyers, that fell 15% since the end of April. Signed contracts to buy homes slipped in June after reaching a six-year high in May. And, again, they're going to blame the rising interest rates. You had the 10-year yield today. That actually hit 2.85%. Looks like it's selling out about 283. So, again, that's up. And I find it hard to believe that if 1% move in the interest rate has affected the home buying applications that much, then it just goes to show you that the home purchasers were being strapped to begin with. There weren't that many out there. Because if it was a strong market and it was getting stronger, I don't believe 1% increase in the rate would have that much of an impact. But obviously it is. So, again, another weakness. And I don't think 1% is that good. Can you imagine what's going to happen when the rates get to 4%? If a raise in 1%, a little over 1%, that means when they get to 3% or 4%, I'm talking crashing. So.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I'll tell you what else we're talking about are commercial announcements, which are going to begin in about 10 seconds. Melody, maybe even sooner. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. I'm not quite clear whether Melody's going to tell you about the special now or tell you about it later.
Well, we do have a caller, so it's let's go to the caller. Then after the caller, we can do the special.
Okay. Joe is on the line from Arkansas, if I understand correctly. Is that right, Joe?
That's right, yes. I am in Arkansas, and I am on the line.
Hi. How you doing, Joe?
Okay. Yeah, hello? Hello, yep. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We do.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I wanted to make a comment on this global free trade situation that you've been talking about, and that's this. Many years ago, I read a book called Unforgiven, the Story of How America Has Exchanged Parity, Agriculture for Parity War, which is the best economics book ever read, done more to help me understand economics than any other single book. And anyway, tariffs are always called trade barriers by the people that promote free trade, you know, as if tariffs decrease the amount of trade in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But this man, the author of Unforgiven, Charles Walter Jr., the book was written in 1975, so all the statistics that he looked up, you know, were before 1975. But anyway, he actually bothered to look up the statistics to see how tariffs actually affected our trade situation. And he found that in the years that America had higher tariffs, the wages of American workers were so much higher that they actually bought not only more stuff made in America, but also more imported stuff. And in the years when we had lower tariffs, more towards the free trade side of things, then the wages of American workers were lower, and they actually bought less imported stuff than when we had higher tariffs. And so tariffs, because they keep up wages, are actually not trade barriers. They actually increase international trade. And we can see this with the situation with China. You know, for a while, the Chinese economy boomed as Americans, you know, were able to borrow money to buy stuff from China. But now it looks like Americans are kind of running out of their ability to buy stuff from China. And I understand the Chinese economy is kind of getting depressed because the formerly rich countries that they used to sell a lot of stuff to, you know, like America and Europe and so on. You know, the wages have gone down so much and so many people are unemployed that they can't even afford to buy the cheap Chinese stuff anymore. And that the Chinese are thinking that if they're going to, you know, have anything of an economy, if they're going to revive their economy, they're going to have to stop by using their people so much as slave labor and actually start paying them decent wages so that they can buy stuff made in China. So anyway, the point
what
I wanted to
this?
Make was
Did...
that this the author of Unforgiven, you know, he made the point that because tariffs keep wages up, they actually increase international trade rather than decrease it.
Well, I don't care, frankly, whether it increases international trade or doesn't, or decreases international trade. I don't understand. It wouldn't bother me if I was, we restore high tariffs, and instead of buying something from Peking, I buy something from Minneapolis-St. Paul. Why is it that I'm obligated? What is my obligation to buy things from some foreign country rather than buy from one of the other states in the Union? I don't understand that. I think we could do well and do better just doing business among ourselves. I'm not trying to eliminate, you know, foreign trade and so on, but first things first. You got to, you know, charity begins at home, and so does productivity. Why did the author of the book you'd mentioned, Unforgiven, how did he explain that, did he offer a reason or an explanation why American laborers earned more when we had higher tariffs?
Yeah, because for one thing, it kept money from draining out of the country. You know, we didn't run a trade deficit. And because it kept the prices, it made imported things more expensive than American-produced things. Therefore, the employers could afford to pay their workers higher wages because they could get good prices for the stuff that they sold.
It's not just that they could afford to pay their workers higher wages. When we manufacture the products right here within this country, it occurs to me that it empowers the unions that are working at a particular business. They can get at the boss. He essentially just lives down the street, and they can shake money loose out of his pockets. On the other hand, if the boss has his factory located in China, the people in this country have no leverage on that employer. Right? They're not there. They can't threaten to go out on strike and compel them to give a fair share of however much money is being earned in the business. And I'm not here to advocate unions. I've never been, you know, a union, you know, advocate. But I recognize that there's something to be said. Those unions put money in the pockets of ordinary people, and right now we have a system that does not put money in the pockets of ordinary people. Instead, it puts money in the pockets of the handful of elitists who own multinational corporations that have production facilities in third world countries like China, and they can make the product for next to nothing, and then ship it across the ocean and sell it here at a premium price. The global free trade, it's great for the people, the handful of people who own multinational corporations, but it is terrible for the American people. And it's good for the people of China, too. It's good for third world countries, but it's terrible for the American people. And, you know, I sit back and say third world is not my problem. So what do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I'd agree with you completely.
You can reach that employer if he's local.
Yeah, absolutely. No, to my mind, these multinational corporations that go for free trade, that promote free trade, that lobby for free trade, you know, that pay congressmen off to vote for free trade, I imagine Walmart is one of the biggest doing it. My mind, they're kind of like pirate ships that aren't loyal to any country. You know, but they're out to just loot and plunder everybody else that they can. Any ship that's got some wealth, you know, they want to loot and plunder it. So instead of looting and plundering, you know, other ships like a pirate ship, you know, they're like pirate businesses that prey on countries. You know, wherever they can get cheap labor, they'll hire the labor there. Wherever they can get cheap raw materials, they'll buy the raw materials there. And then wherever there's some, you know, wealth accumulated, where people can pay high prices for their stuff and they can make a good profit selling it there, then they'll sell the stuff there. And so they're not businesses that help any country or help any people. You know,
they have no loyalty except to their bottom line. How did we get these pirate ships you're describing?
How did we get them?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's because of the money, the fiat money system. Like Thomas Jefferson said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the currency, then by inflating and deflating the money supply, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until the people wake up homeless on the continent their forefathers conquered. And so I think it's because of the fiat money system, you know, headed by the Federal Reserve, that these corporations have been able to become so rich and powerful that they can buy off the government to give them these free trade agreements.
Well, that goes to political campaign contribution laws also. If we shut the government down, again, no congressman, no senator, no president should be able to take money from anyone who can't vote. Point one, if you're not registered to vote, you can't give money. That means no money from unions, no money from corporations, only from voters and only for people who are eligible to vote for you. If you're running in a particular district in Texas, for example, all right, you can take all the money you want from anybody that's registered to vote in that district, but you can't take a nickel from anyone outside that district, outside the state, outside the area that you're supposed to represent. Under those circumstances, we'd begin to see representatives who are representing their district, the people of their districts, rather than representing whoever's got the most money and the most lobbyists in Congress. The other point I wanted to make is it's the corporations that have become the hull of these pirate ships you've described. And originally, corporations were intended to help the people. The idea is we would allow the corporations to exist, but they would do so because it allowed for the concentration of capital that you couldn't achieve with just one man, and the capital by accumulating, you had greater power and you could do great things and build railroads across the country and the rest of that. But insofar as corporations were originally intended to help the people in general, they have become something where they're in it for themselves and themselves alone, and they don't care about America or China or Europe or the Muslims or the Christians or the pagans. It's all about the bottom line for the corporation, and they function purely as predators rather than benefactors. I don't know, and I'm not arguing that corporations were ever truly benefactors, but at least that was, they had to give lip service to that idea. More recently, it's just grab every nickel you can grab. If you're in a corporation, grab every nickel you can grab, and the result is we have some problems in this country.
I don't know if corporations were ever like that. I mean, that's how the unions were originally created, because the corporations would just, they were so abusive to the employees. You know, they, you know, I think it may be that the corporations were,
I'm not arguing that they were ever noble.
It was always greed and...
Point.
It's always greed and their profits.
Yeah, but there was attempts to limit that greed, or at least I suspect there were more attempts. Right now, that greed isn't resisted. It's celebrated because based on that greed, they come up with enough money to buy our congressmen, our senators, and our presidents. And now they celebrate. Hooray! The corporations are greedy and they're stealing money from the American people, but they're giving some of it to us in Congress. So what's wrong with that? That seems to be the mentality. What do you think, Joe? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, it seems like everything's upside down. You know, I heard somebody explain it very well one time, and that's that God creates people, people create governments, and governments create corporations. And so God is supposed, people are supposed to put themselves under control of God. You know, they're supposed to follow God's plan, God's design, God's guidance, and so on like that. And then governments are supposed to be controlled by the people, and then corporations should be controlled by the government. Now everything is upside down and backwards. You know, corporations are controlling the government, and the government's controlling the people.
Again, how did the corporations get control of the government?
Well, through the power of money, and through the power of being able to bribe and bypass politicians.
That's why the political campaign contribution laws are so important. You've got to keep people in Congress, the Senate, the White House, they have to be restricted from taking money from major entities. They should only be able to take money from people who can vote.
No, you can't,
leave them alone. Anything else, Joe?
Yeah, I would agree with that idea completely. I think you're full of good ideas for reforming this country in good ways, Al, you know, and if you were talking about starting a third political party sometime. And if you do, and if you have that as one of your platforms, you know, that only voters in the district can give to a politician. I'll certainly support that political party.
Well, what state are you?
I hope you're getting more radio stations.
Yep, you're. Well, I hope so too. You know, from your mouth to God's ears, or melodies, one or the other. One of them.
Right? All righty, thank you, Joe.
All right,
okay.
Thank you, Joe.
All righty.
Mm-hmm. Bye bye. What else, Melody?
Well, it's
easy credit dries up, choking growth in China. It's a report from the New York Times. Painful credit crisis is now spreading across China, as thousands of businesses have closed, fleets of BMWs and Audis have been repossessed, and street protests have erupted. Now the leading purveyor of Western fashions are deserted. Monthly sales at restaurants are down as much as 97%, and the marble entrance of the Fortune Garden Club is shuttered. All but one of the city's dealerships has failed. It's an economic crisis just like the United States had, just like it, said Wang Ting, operator of an illegal casino in Fugu near Shenmue. There's no cash. Everyone stays home without a job. There's no way the economy can recover. What I'm getting to on all of this is, what does the loss of easy credit tell us? You got an idea, Melanie?
What does easy credit tell us?
The loss of easy credit. It tells me, I won't say this is the absolute truth of the matter, but it tells me that Chinese lenders are losing confidence in the Chinese economy. And they are unwilling to lend because they don't think they can get their money back.
Well, the Chinese...
The
Chinese banking system is... I mean, they have just as much corruption and everything over there than anywhere.
My point is, we hear reports about how robust the Chinese economy is. If it's true that easy credit is disappearing in China, it's evidence that it may not be as robust as what we're led to believe.
They can't build any more vacant cities.
Yeah, I know. Those vacant cities, perhaps they can lease them out to the senior citizens who are on Obamacare.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to put senior citizens in this country on Obamacare and cut their Social Security, but it'll all be okay because we're going to house you in a vacant, an abandoned city in China.
In the desert somewhere.
Yeah. The desert, or who knows, the mountains, I don't know. You can all walk up to your 33rd floor apartment because the elevators don't work, but it'll be cheap. That'll be the important thing. Who knows?
Hey, you talk about confidence. Consumer confidence in the U.S. fell unexpectedly in August as higher interest rates and a dip in the growth appear to sap optimism. You had the Thomas Reuters University of Michigan preliminary. This is just a preliminary reading of consumer sentiment. Slipped from a 6-year high of 85.1 in July to 80.0. The figure was well below the 85.5 reading that these economists were expecting. And so again, consumer confidence, folks. You don't get 70% of the population purchasing when they see cracks in their investment portfolios, and they're not out there buying when all they hear on is once those rates go up, the market's going to crash. So I just can't even imagine anyone being in paper at this point in time. I can't imagine anyone being in anything other than gold and silver at this time. I mean, it's okay to speculate, but just make sure that you have your speculation backed up and covered with physical gold and silver in your hands. In your hands.
Well, so, you know, as we talked yesterday, it's too late. It's too early to say for sure.
And you
but
know
the
what?
The jump we've seen, it's up $60. Price of gold's up almost $60 since last Friday. That's good. That's a good week.
Yeah, but
what we saw yesterday and even today, it suggests that we have maybe turned a corner. Maybe things are going to get dramatically better in the near future. And by near future, I mean immediately after these commercial announcements, which we're going to break for right now. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here at Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, Melody wants to tell you about her special.
A special and a comparison. We had a lot of action in silver, of course, this week and today in particular. And I had several calls on half-ounce silver rounds. Thinking, why would anybody want to buy half-ounce silver rounds? So I did some shopping, did some comparison shopping, and I'm going to call Dealer A and Dealer B. Dealer A is selling a bag of silver rounds, half-ounce silver rounds, 250 ounces, which you would get 500 coins, of course. So they're actually selling their half-ounce rounds for $2.30 over spot. Well, our folks... our price for 1 ounce rounds is $1.95. So why wouldn't you want to pay less?
$1.95 over spot.
So why wouldn't you want to pay less and get more? Because that half ounce silver round really isn't going to do you anything. You're only paying more for your silver. Dealer B is selling their half ounce rounds for $3 over spot. And again, our price is $1.95 over spot. And if you buy more than 500, our price is even lower. Folks, it is all about price. You want to get as much as you can for your dollar. And don't let these half-ounce pitches getting in for barter situation make you pay more for your silver. Because you're going to sell it back. If it comes in a bag, you're going to all clunk up together, get scratched. You're not going to get that much for it. When you go to sell it back, you're just going to get regular price for silver. So why would you pay more? I don't get it. So you want to get as much as you can for your dollars. Our special today is a tube of silver rounds, 20 ounces, and for barter, AU $5 Liberty gold piece. It includes shipping for $970. It's a tube of silver rounds, 20 ounces, one AU $5 gold Liberty piece, include shipping for $970. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I just want to encourage folks to visit our website at dgscoins.com DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we're going to have another newsletter, another article in there by Lori Roth, and she talks about Benghazi and how the cover-up deepens with Benghazi and the connection to Morsi and Egypt. So make sure.
Morsi has been strangely, if he's doing anything, it's not. I haven't heard about it. It may be that he's out in the open someplace. But he's the missing man right now, so far as I'm able to understand. We can talk about that in a moment, though. Let's talk to Sherry, who is calling us from, I'm not sure. Sherry, where are you calling from?
Kansas.
Kansas?
There? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Hi, Melody. Hi, Al.
Hi,
Sherry. Al, I want to take you back to anti-Shyster days.
Okay.
You published a, it was, Eric Moebius was the the guy you were talking about, and he, I don't know if there was a follow-up. I think this was like in a 97 issue where you talked.
Oh, I think it was earlier than that, but you might be right. It might have been as late as 97.
This was the second
I think it was closer to 94, 95.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they talked about, they thought that the insurance, some crooked people, including the Texas Bar, was doing this loss streaming, laundering drug money,
it was a terrible situation. Eric Moebius was a former assistant attorney general here in Texas. He went into private practice, and he had a client who was an extraordinary, just a bizarre story. The woman was a Mexican immigrant. She didn't speak English. She lived in this, she'd been in this country for a few years. Her little boy was outside playing in a field, and witnesses said that a pickup truck came up and ran over the little kid, came up off the street, backed up past the little boy, then came forward, hit him, and killed him. And none of it made good sense. Turned out the pickup truck was insured for $1 million, all right, against these kinds of accidents. She went to court. Her attorney abandoned her. They lost the case. Her attorney then abandoned her, and she thought it was all done. But what they came to discover is that after the client had been removed from the case, then the attorney, in conjunction with the judge in the case, and in conjunction with the insurance company that laid the $1 million on this truck, they went ahead and they took the case to court again without the client. Everybody just trusted the attorney. They got a judgment. In fact, they threatened to take to court, and because the insurance company was part of it, the insurance company agreed to write a big check. The check was ultimately divided by the attorney, the judge, and the insurance company executives. And the woman, the boy was dead, and the woman was left penniless. Well, Moebius discovered that this wasn't an isolated incident. He uncovered a cadre, a conspiracy of lawyers, judges, and insurance executives that were causing people to die. They were murdering people. Not a handful. This was a big business. We exposed that in the magazine. Eric Moebius thought he would be recognized as a hero for exposing this criminal enterprise. And in fact, as a result of his reports, which we published in the magazine, Moebius was threatened with disbarment 11, 12 times. Right? They tried to disbar him, and they finally did. And the last I heard, Eric moved up to State of Washington. Again, I've had no contact with him since, but no good deed goes unpunished. But that's Moebius' story.
Part of the scandal was that the Texas Bar, and Roy Minton was one of the guys you mentioned, the money went into a reserve account and then the lawyer's account, and that's where they thought they were lost streaming.
Yeah, that's the problem they had was, this whole thing worked because whenever you win money in court on a personal injury case, the money is not taxed. And therefore, the only report on this is the insurance company reported that they paid out the money, and everybody thought the insurance company wouldn't pay a dime if it didn't have to. So they paid out a fat check, and it went to the attorney's account, and the attorney's account doesn't pay interest to the attorney. The interest for the attorney accounts goes to the state bar, and it's supposed to be used to fund poor people, legal services for poor people. But because of that, nobody knows how much money is in an attorney's account. It became an ideal vehicle for laundering money. And that was one of the key elements to this story. But I'll tell you what, Sherry, we're going to run out of time here. And did want to get to another
question.
Subject.
Okay. Are you familiar with the big bucks it costs if you're involved in an organ transplant, what the people have to pay?
No, that's not something I'm over. That's not something
I know
about.
Well, there's a doctor that's been, alerting people to that, you know, these donor cards that you sign, and especially that they get your kids to sign when they go into driver's ed, that you're worth more dead than alive, especially if you're between 16 and 13, or between, say, 16 and 30. They want those young organs. And I was just wondering, and all the states are involved in this, and I just wondered.
Wouldn't surprise me.
If this could be a new legal way that they're laundering money is through because my ex-sister-in-law, she died on the table, but her husband he had horrendous medical bills from a heart or a lung transplant. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about million-dollar operations nowadays.
No, and you're not going to get many of them under Obamacare. If you want real medical care before it's all over, they have to do it.
But all the
market.
States are involved in this. Could this be new way to launder money?
I don't know enough about laundering money than I can say it might be. It's another way of making money, I guarantee you. Laundering, I'm not sure. Making money, absolutely. If there's a way to make a buck, I guarantee there'll be crooks looking for a way to get it.
Thanks, Al.
All right, Sherry, thanks very much for your call. Thanks for your insight, comments, and so on. And now Melody wanted to say something about Egypt.
Yeah, I want to thank Sherry for calling because it's amazing what we know, Al, huh?
Yeah.
We know a lot, don't you? You know a lot. I know a lot.
Yeah, if I could remember everything I knew, I'd be really dangerous. The problem is that I can't remember much beyond maybe 72 hours or so.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sherry. And I did want to make a comment before we moved on was, again, we're going to talk about gold. Global consumers' demand for gold hit its highest level ever in the second quarter, spiking to 1,083 tons, and that's up 53%. Yeah. Compared to the same time last year. And, of course, we all know where that demand came from. Can you say China and India?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they rushed to buy jewelry, but also coins and gold bars. And so everyone knows it is just amazing how slow the people in this country are. They just don't get it when the price is low. They wait till it moves up. And we talk about all the time about buying low, selling high. And so it's good to see. We haven't even gone into the Indian wedding season yet. What's interesting, you hear all these commentators everywhere, why gold is so bad and no one's buying it, who wants it? Well, and again, you mentioned yesterday, and I think we talked about this yesterday too, where China and India are countries of poor countries.
No, no, they get it.
Yeah.
They understand this, and, you know, Americans have been deceived into believing in paper. We talk about Federal Reserve will tell you the value of the dollar depends on the confidence of American people. That's all it is. It's a completely subjective system, and the poor people don't buy all this this interesting subjectivity. They say, give me the gold. Give me a piece of gold I can put in my hand. That's real. They're not buying, you know, the BS that the rest of us have succumbed to, and time is coming when we will become as intelligent and knowledgeable as poor people. The way things are going, we're going to get there because many of us are going to become poor people, and then we will begin to get smart. Right? No. We would wish it were otherwise. We would wish that you could learn from other people's mistakes, but most of us can't. We got to make the mistakes ourselves, and then we say, oh, I'll be darned. What else, Melody? What have we got, 3 minutes?
Well, we got about 3 minutes, but there's a lot of companies over in Egypt that are holding operations. A number of international companies, they've suspended operations in Egypt as 3 days of violent street battles make the streets of Cairo unsafe. And I mentioned to you during break, I heard reports where the disruptions have spread to Alexandria, and he's also had disruptions already on the Suez Canal. So, but you don't see much reporting on that. You had General Motors, Electrolux, Royal Dutch Shell, Toyota, Suzuki, BASF, SC, and others shut down their facilities, told their thousands of workers to stay home. Again, this was just a precautionary safety measure. Well, I probably wouldn't have gone to work anyway. General Motors, though, Egyptian operations will remain shut indefinitely, including a plant in the Cairo suburb of 6th October City, where it makes cars, light trucks, and minibuses. And they actually employ about 1,400 workers in Egypt since 1983. When it became the first private automaker to establish the operations in the country. And last night I was on a program with Lori Roth, and folks can go to her website, therothshow.com, and she did a pretty good interview with this gentleman who has what he believes is that the connection with Benghazi to Mohamed Morsi, the president or the ex-president of Egypt. And so Egypt is a very big player and had connections to Benghazi. And so I find the connection.
So we just find out that at the top, Egypt is probably just as corrupt as most of the rest of the governments in the world, including our own. And all of them know nothing except the law of necessity and just outright greed. You know, it's just un-American to trust your government. I've said that on the program before, and I don't have enough time to go into that argument again, but it really is. It's un-American. You don't have to be a bomber or shoot people in the wrist, but you can't just trust these people in Washington or your state headquarters or even your local. You got to get involved. You got to keep an eye on these people. Show up at the meetings. They're boring and they're a waste of time, but you keep showing up, keep speaking out. You may be able to make a good, positive difference that will be beneficial for you, for your family, for your community. We need to get involved, folks, as best we can, but we are out of time for today, so I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, good Lord, bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.